This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour three as we continue along. Again, the big story in the NFL continues to be what Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens are going to do. Ken Wyman is going to join us at the bottom of the hour, host of Inside Access on The Fan 105.7 in Baltimore. As I've been saying all morning in the last 2 days, this is going to be a big deal. Excuse me. His contract is going to be setting where future contracts are going to go. But also, there is another story of a quarterback that could be franchise tagged, but his running back could also be franchise tagged, and that is Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. Daniel Jones had a great year under Brian Daboll, but he's had a career where he's had a number of head coaches, he's had a number of offensive coordinators, he's never really found his groove, and then finally the Giants land the right head coach in Brian Daboll. And so Daniel Jones progressed under him and did well, and now it is time to figure out what you're going to pay Daniel Jones. Now, is Jones going to be asking for the same level as Lamar Jackson? Unlikely, and the Giants are not going to go down that road with him. But Mark Canzanaro of the New York Post, who we've had on before, he does some golf stuff, but he's also has a very good column today talking about Daniel Jones and the Giants and Daniel Jones. And he basically starts off the column by saying, Daniel Jones needs the Giants more than the Giants need him. And it's a very interesting point that I think gets lost in all of this, because when we talk about quarterbacks and we talk about who can play in this league and who is just playing in this league until somebody better comes along, sometimes we forget that sometimes the team you're on is the real reason you've gotten so much success. Now, if I were to pluck Daniel Jones and land him, let's say, in Pittsburgh, does he have the same upside and the same potential? Or is it because, in the end, this quarterback, who's 25 years old, who's had three head coaches and four offensive coordinators, has blossomed into this quarterback that now you can trust? But how much of that is because, in the end, New York knows they're one of the reasons why he's gotten successful? So a 9-7-1 season and getting into the playoffs for the first time in 6 years, right? Daniel Jones is responsible for most of that. In fact, he's responsible for all of it. If you're the quarterback, you get credit for the wins and losses. Even if it's unfair, that's just the way it is. I'm really curious to see where they're going to go with Barkley and Daniel Jones, because I don't think you need to franchise Daniel Jones. I think you can be working out a deal pretty quickly. I think even though he changed agents and is now going with CAA, went from CAA to Athletes First, I think that switch that he's made, I think you can get a deal done pretty good. I think everybody kind of knows where they stand. I think with Saquon Barkley, you franchise him, and then you see if you can work on a deal with that one. As we talked about before, your quarterback is obviously the most important, but I think it's going to be easier to do a deal here, because running backs, you hate to be in the room to be sort of like putting down the position, but you have to be realistic about the position, right? Running backs always think they're way more valuable than they actually are, and teams have to sort of backtrack and be like, well, in the end, we are just looking for this amount of production that we feel like we can get in other ways. But your quarterback being sort of this heart and soul, and there's these intangibles, et cetera, some of these things you can't measure, I think the Giants would be interested to see where it goes. I think it's about $30 to $35 million a year. That seems to be where people have pegged this. I agree with that. I don't think he hits the upper echelon of payment. But it depends on how much money of that is going to be guaranteed. How long is that system, how long is that contract for, and where does that go? So the Giants will put the tag on somebody. Either they're going to be Jones or Barkley. If they put the tag on Jones, like I was talking earlier about Lamar Jackson, it's $32.4 million. That's the tag number for 2023 on the non-exclusive tag. They're not going to exclusive tag him, that's for sure. But if he does play on that franchise tag, it's probably just – now, if he does, and really rarely that they do, but if he does, then you end up in a situation where you're paying him just probably a little bit more than what you would have paid him in a deal anyway. Le'Veon Bell, remember Le'Veon Bell didn't want to play on the franchise tag? He gave up a whole year of his playing status.
Do I?
Remember that? Yeah.
Then remember he mysteriously arrived back in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. So very so they will play on it. They don't like it, but they'll hold out. They make it a mess, and so you're better off just coming.
If you have the funds, or if you're planning on signing them anyway, sign them.
Yeah. Again, if you're going to franchise tag them at 32.5, 32.4 on the non-exclusive tag, and you were going to pay them between $30 and $35 million anyway, and maybe they want a little bit more, but if you put it in the realm, that's what you just tag it at that. Just make it at that. Yep. You don't necessarily have to put the tag on them. Work it out. So, but I kind of agree with the sentiment that I think if you're Daniel Jones's camp, be smart about this. I mean, you've got an organization that has seen you grow. They certainly did put obstacles in his way early in his career with some bad head coaches. But now that you know that this quarterback and this coach work well together, that you have a little bit of leverage in this deal, right? I mean, it's almost what Baltimore is dealing with is an offense that is entirely built around Lamar Jackson, and bringing in an offensive coordinator that doesn't know exactly what he's going to do because he doesn't know if his quarterback is going to be around. But in this situation, you'd be able to get it done for Daniel Jones. Let's get back to the Jet situation. You mentioned it in the good, the bad, and the dumb, but I want to get a little bit more in depth into this. I honestly think the Jets made a huge mistake with this. I really do.
Yeah.
It really puts them in a bad situation. They really didn't have to say anything, but because they – here's the thing if you're the Jets. Let's just break it down here. So the Jets need a quarterback, right? They don't have a quarterback. It's not going to be Zach Wilson. It's not going to be Mike White. It's not going to be Joe Flacco. They need a quarterback. So who's available right now? Like, who's available right now for them to sign? Well, there's only one. It's Derek Carr. In terms of high-level quarterbacks, there's only one. It's Derek Carr. Now, you're waiting on Aaron Rodgers, right? Now, secretly in your room, in your office, you could say, okay, secretly we all know that in the end we want Aaron Rodgers. We like Derek Carr, but we know Aaron Rodgers is really good and might get that kick that comes from a new place and a new team. So we really want to see where what's going on with Aaron Rodgers. However, there's nothing, right? Like, Green Bay doesn't have to trade him.
No, nope.
There's no free agency coming. There isn't a date where Aaron Rodgers is free to go about wherever he wants.
Not only that, but I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, Green Bay could come back and ask for everything.
Everything. Right. Right. Exactly. So,
you know, then all
he's
of a sudden
under contract
the Jets
to the
Thanos.
Packers. Yeah. Yeah. He's under contract to the Packers. Now, why don't the Packers just go, screw it, this conversation is null and void, we don't want him around? Well, as Alex Stroff pointed out yesterday on this show, they are dealing with the potential, what do we do with Jordan Love now? He's been around a while. We've got to, if we want to keep him around, we're going to have to sign him. But we can't sign him to big dollars that he's expecting off his rookie deal because he's a backup quarterback. We can't give him starting QB money and pay Aaron Rodgers. So what do we do with it? Do we cut our losses with Jordan Love and start all over again? Well, they like Jordan Love. So in Green Bay's case, the best scenario is to keep Aaron Rodgers, but figure out a way to keep Jordan Love at bay. Big ask, but nevertheless, that's what you're asking them to do. So the Jets have no guarantee of anything playing out in the Aaron Rodgers situation, so they have to play the waiting game. Well, Derek Carr doesn't have to play the waiting game. Derek Carr can go to any team that wants to sign him, and he can do it right now. So if you're the Jets, you made a mistake here in that you went a little overboard in your praise of Derek Carr, because now people are going to wonder why you didn't sign him in the first place.
A little overzealous.
Yeah, so overzealous. Play hard to get, females get jealous. Sorry, I had to. Sorry. Stupid me. I'm so dumb.
No, but I mean, you're absolutely right. It's if you truly believe, you can't go back now.
No.
Why even bother pursuing Aaron Rodgers? Why even bother drafting a quarterback this upcoming draft? Or why look at anybody else that might be on the market? You know, whether it's, a Jimmy G or a Trey Lance, you name another quarterback that's available. You've pretty much put all your chips in the Derek Carr basket.
Yeah, exactly. The Derek, you basically, when you say that you can win a Super Bowl here and be a Hall of Famer here
with us,
then what are you waiting for?
You can't do that with anybody else. You can with us.
So if you're the Saints, why aren't you going? Look, they obviously aren't doing anything. Like you know the writing on the wall over there. They're waiting for Aaron Rodgers. You are Plan B.
And I know that these guys do see the writing on the wall, but what about the Jets quarterbacks on the roster now?
Yeah, right.
Like, is that so devastating of a thing? I mean, are we 100% sure that Zach Wilson will never have a career, that Mike White will never have a career? Joe Flacco is pretty much done anyways, but, you know, like, are we now, like, at that 100% certainty that these guys are just exiled?
Yeah, right. Exactly. What's going to happen to them? Bounce around the league a little bit. Hopefully, because you land somewhere where it works.
Are you, as a team owner, as a team president, general manager, do you bring in a guy that is like, well, you know, he might get us a few wins here and there, but he's never going to win a Super Bowl for us?
Well, I think those guys, yeah, I think those guys are going to find backup roles pretty quickly. Like, I think right. That's about it. That's all they got until they can showcase that they can be starters. Maybe they get an opportunity in a 4-game stretch and they do really well and they look like they're maturing, growing in that position. And then somebody goes, you know what? Come over here. We're looking for a quarterback or we're in transition. Come here. And then maybe it turns into something, right? Maybe it turns into you actually were way better than we initially thought. You know, it's not exactly apples to apples, but it's kind of like Jared Goff. I mean, Jared Goff was a guy that did go to a Super Bowl with the Rams, but was never the guy. They never really felt like he was the guy. Then he goes to Detroit, and you just think he's a placeholder. And now he's playing well enough to make the Lions go, wait a minute, maybe this is our quarterback. Maybe that happens to Zach Wilson. I doubt it. It just doesn't feel like he's got that.
He doesn't have it.
Doesn't have it. But again, if you're the Jets, what if Derek Carr called today? What if his agent called right now and said, what's your offer right now? What's your offer right now? How do you hold him off? How do you hold him off while you wait for the Aaron Rodgers saga to play out? It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Ron's got the latest XFL ratings from the weekend. James Larson, who came on the show Monday. I'm sorry, I got my days mixed up. Was on. We talked about the opening weekend.
Yeah,
so,
he posted it. And this is
what
from,
were the ratings?
This
they
is
good?
From the weekly, or the ratings are from Skedball.
Okay.
So Arlington, Vegas. You know, the Arlington, I don't even know what the team names are. Sorry.
I don't either.
But Arlington versus Vegas, which was on ABC. 1.5 million.
That's not bad.
Or 1.53 million.
ABC would think a little more, but that's not bad.
Yeah, San Antonio, St. Louis, which also was on ABC, 1.57 million.
Okay.
And then the two shows that were on ESPN, Orlando, Houston was the lowest rated show or lowest rated game of the week. That was 751,000 viewers.
Ooh.
And then DC, Seattle was 918,000 viewers.
All right.
So the fact that didn't crack a million viewers on both their ESPN games, which is a major drop from week one in 2020.
Yeah, well, it's too bad. Maybe it needs a little bit more momentum.
Yeah.
Man, it is amazing. Though a million, that's not bad, but you know, it's kinda you're kinda hoping to do a little better than that.
I started thinking about this because, you know, we're starting to see ads for the USFL. The USFL just had their draft.
Right.
I wonder how many of those kids will actually stay with the team.
yeah, no kidding.
But did the XFL start too soon?
Did it need to start a week right after the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably not.
Because the USFL, we're like a month away.
So give people a little bit of a break and then bring on a spring league.
Well, like
bring
really,
on a new league.
Because right now, honestly, were we really jonesing for football? No, we just got done with the NFL season. We were good. Come March, mid-March, beginning of April, when all we have is what we've been digesting college basketball and NBA, and we're starting to get that baseball fever, we're going to be saying, you know, we can use a little football right now.
I am totally behind this. I think every sport needs a break. Every single sport needs a break. You don't need it every weekend. And you need to get it and, you know, take some time off. And then if you're jonesing for it, here's a new league that's coming up. But I think every sport needs an off season to sort of digest and reset and everything like that. And as a sport, entertainment vehicle, I think you need time away from it. I mean, there are things that feel like they go on all year long, like golf. I feel like there's a professional tournament going on all the
time.
Not PGA Tour, but like if the PGA Tour is down, I can get golf from Malaysia or something on, you know what I mean?
Tennis.
Yeah, tennis feels like one. That.
It feels like, I mean, there's just something going on all the time, whether it's an actual tournament for their season, or it's like all of a sudden they have, oh, we're doing these exhibition games, retirement right. matches, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, and motorsports is the same way. Like NASCAR season ends, but then the guys are like, they're like racing in the dirt in Iowa somewhere, right? There's always something on. But you do need a pause, because you just need to say,
just
all
need
right,
to forget you for a little bit.
Let's just forget a little bit, and then let me move on to something else. You can't have it every day. It's like when you're a kid and you want candy all the time, or you want pizza every day. You go, hey, you don't. No, you don't. You want, get a little break and then come back to it. So maybe the XFL made a mistake by saying, you know what would be the best? We just go right from the Super Bowl right to week one, when everybody's sort of emotionally like, there's some closure on this season. Let me take a breather. And now the XFL is like, jump right on into the swimming pool. It's like, give me a couple of weeks and I'll get into the swimming pool.
Like, I mean, for us, let's be honest. We got a lot of making up to do.
Yeah, right.
You know, there were a couple of Sundays, you know, some kids' birthday parties that they were invited to that we skipped. Or, you know, lunch dates with our spouses that we skipped.
Yeah.
We went to a place. It's like, oh, yeah, we can go to lunch, but I got to make sure there's TVs.
Yeah, you gotta get back into some sort of regular weekend life, if you know what I mean.
For me, it's my lawn.
Yeah.
My lawn is so overgrown right now. I mean, of course, it's been cold.
You're
it's
so
raining
lucky.
And
I have
like
not,
that.
I can't mow yet. I am excited to get the lawn
mine
going.
Is,
it's
still mine a little is, brown. Mine's starting to look like a forest out there. And I'm like, oh, God, this is, you know, when you start to lose your small dog.
Oh, there you go.
Know, and he's able to hide, or he's not able to do his business because, you know, it's tickling his underside. I think it's
are you time. At that point where the neighbors are sending you little notes like, Ron,
no,
please
no,
mow
no,
your lawn.
God.
It's an eyesore.
Thank God. Well, no, because my front yard, I haven't been able to. I can't grow in my front yard. I got to figure something out.
I can't either. I've seeded my front yard forever, and I can't get anything popping.
I mean, we've done that. We did that last year. And you know, it's like really what we need to do is like I almost got to say we got to cut down this tree. It's providing too much shade or just get, you know, because even when I plant shade grass that grows in the shade, it's not growing.
Yeah, I can't get anything going. I can't either.
And that looks.
I remember
that
one
looks
year.
Terrible.
One year, I reseeded my lawn, and my buddy who did it said, "Okay, now you got to let this grow. We got to let this grow for a while, and then you cut it." And I was like, "All right." So I remember telling my neighbors, my friends, I'm like, "Hey guys, don't send me any notes about my lawn. Like, it's gonna look like a jungle for a bit. I'm establishing the root of the grass." And they were like, "Yeah, no, we did that." And then I mowed the lawn. And I had the best-looking lawn in the neighborhood because ha, ha, ha. But nevertheless, I can't get anything going in my front yard now. I can't. I tried, but I can't. But I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm like I was in Lowe's and Home Depot, and I just look at the gardening stuff, and I'm like, okay, it's about that time of year again where I got to start figuring out as it gets warmer, I got to, you know, I got to water pressure the deck, and I got to go and clean up this, and we're going to clean the garage out with all the stuff that we've just thrown in there this winter without any organization. But then you can get me back with some other things. And I think that's the problem with if you just keep just asking people to be committed to something over and over again. In the end, does the XFL catch on? My advice to the XFL would be, and they're not going to listen to me because Dwayne The Rock Johnson, for crying out loud. But nevertheless, just be patient. Let people feel a sense of attachment to this. Right? You can't force it.
And they might because you've chosen communities or areas that don't have a professional team.
Right. You're doing pretty good with
Houston.
You're doing pretty good.
I can tell you this. Houston probably made up most of that 750,000 people that watched.
Right.
Because there are a lot of roughneck fans, you know, at least in the circles that I know of that are here. And because, I mean, why not? They were 6-0 before everything went kaput.
San Antonio got a good crowd, right?
San Antonio has
a good
crowd.
It's a good football town without an NFL team. And
St. Louis as well.
St. Louis has been dying for, you know, they lost the Rams. Yeah, it's in Seattle, sure. It's in Vegas, sure. But you're right. There's Orlando doesn't have a team, you know, so there's give it some time to catch. Just give it time. But don't do what Vince McMahon did. Vince McMahon when 20 years ago, he literally gave up on this when it started, right. when he started to realize
he gave up on it twice, not even 20 years ago.
He gave it up twice, right.
Go 3 years ago when, you know, sports shut down and he just saw that as a way out. Like, never mind.
The first iteration, there was so much buzz for it. People were really wondering. Here's the thing. People were 20 years ago, people were combining his genius for business and sports entertainment married with something like this and saying, you know what? If there's one person in the world that could make a new league work, it's him. Right. And then once he got that partnership with NBC, where NBC was like, we're all in with it too. Cause remember NBC lost football. And what Don Allemeyer said was one of the dumbest things ever happened was them losing the rights to the NFL. Then it looked like, okay, these two monsters were going to come together and create something. But once the problem started hitting, then he started going, all right, this didn't turn out what I thought it was going to turn out, and I'm getting a lot of pressure with ratings. I'm not getting pressure on people going. Like, it was never about ticket sales are down or merchandising. It was never any conversation about that. The only thing that mattered was ratings are down, and they're down, and they're down, and they're down. And by week five, they were down so much, it was like, that's it. You know, we're just going to inflict this thing off. And the second iteration, a couple of years ago, they sort of abandoned that and they went to, let's build it up. Let's have good teams, good logos. Let's play, you know, let's get the local people involved and let's just grow this again and let's see where we go. But it never got caught because when COVID hit and they shut it down for good. And I honestly think that the second iteration of that, of the XFL, and the fact that it was cheap in bankruptcy court allowed Dwayne Johnson to see maybe there's enough here because it was a good product 3 years ago. It was a pretty compelling thing. It was very interesting. It was pretty good. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't laughable.
And listen, what was the big takeaway this weekend? These with the people that I follow, all the sports media pundits that you know I follow and you probably follow, I haven't really heard a negative thing about it.
No.
The only thing I keep hearing is like, all right, will the NFL adopt these rules?
Right. And keep doing that and keep and get a social media team that is constantly taking these examples and posting them.
Yeah.
So that people who are not watching this will go, hey, you know what? That kickoff, it looks really interesting, and explain why it's better. Just do that. Just get a social media team out there constantly saying, look at what we're doing differently. Build it up slowly. If you're looking at the first week and going, oh, crap, we only got 1 million people, you're looking at it wrong. It didn't cost a lot of money to acquire this. I know it costs a lot of money to run it, but keep at it. You got a lot of good investors behind it. Stick with it. Don't get all discouraged because less than 1 million people watched your Arlington game. All right, Ken Wyman was going to join us next from Baltimore. We'll talk Ravens.
Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's head out to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive Insurance, looking for a career path with great flexibility and great pay and benefits? Go to progressive.com/careers. And drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today. Find out how we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Ken Wyman joins us, host of Inside Access in Baltimore at 105.7 The Fan. On the Ravens' current situation with Lamar Jackson, they had Tom Monken in a press conference yesterday. And, of course, this is the big story this offseason because it really could set everything down the line depending on how this works out. How are you, Ken?
What's going on, man? How are you?
Good, man. All right, so how close are these two parties right now? We've been hearing a lot about Ravens want this and Lamar wants this, but in reality, how close are they or how far apart are they?
They're pretty darn far apart. I think they've never gotten close. I think Lamar Jackson wants a fully guaranteed deal, and the Ravens have never been willing to give him fully guaranteed money. And you know, both sides are sort of kind of dug in on this, and both have their, you know, Lamar Jackson saw what Deshaun Watson got, and he says, I'm better than Deshaun Watson. And quite frankly, he is, so he feels like he deserves more. And if I'm the Ravens, I'm sitting there going, this is my quarterback who has missed the last two Decembers. As we're on a playoff push, I don't know that I can pay him that kind of money. I don't think anything has changed. We've been dealing with this for 2 years, and nothing has changed.
How much of the outside pressure is coming on both sides? From Lamar's side, if he can get the guaranteed money, it sets the standard for every big quarterback getting a new deal. And on the Ravens side, if they are the second team that does this, that's it. Every team's going to have to do this.
Well, it is interesting because Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, who rarely talks, talked at last year's owners meeting and basically said that he was not happy with the deal that Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns, gave to Sean Watson. And they're looking at that deal as an outlier. Lamar's a unique dude. I don't think that he's worried about any outside pressure. I don't think he hears any outside pressure. I think in his mind, and he is his own agent, he's getting help from the NFLPA, but he's representing himself. But I feel like with him, he's like, I'm better than Deshaun Watson. I deserve more than Deshaun Watson, and that's what I'm going to get. And if he doesn't get it here, quite frankly, he'll get it elsewhere.
Yeah. Todd Monken being hired, this was a deal situation where he gets hired. He's back in the NFL, but his quarterback is not on board yet. He doesn't know if his quarterback is going to be on board yet. So where does he fit right now, today? What is he planning on? How is he planning on changing the offense when he doesn't know what pieces he has?
Well, that is a great question. He was asked that yesterday and basically said, look, I think Lamar Jackson's an elite talent, but I got to just move forward. I think that personally, and just to get through all this, I think they're going to trade him before the draft.
Yeah.
And then you start building the offense around what you have after that. Though, you know, Greg Roman, who won the Assistant Coach of the Year award in 2019 when the Ravens went 14-2, it's gone backwards since then. It kind of peaked at what they could do with Greg Roman. His passing schemes were archaic, very good run coordinator, whereas Monken is a guy that can sort of play to the talent he has. And I think this offseason they're going to need to figure out what is that talent, because they're going to have to kind of reset the offense.
That situation last year towards the end of the season, should he play, would he play, how much of that was real? How much of the criticism was real, and how much of it was justified?
Based on what I've heard, I don't know that that everybody was thrilled with the way the season ended. And I think that cloud is around the whole thing, whether it be the locker room or the front office, et cetera. You know, he came out and released those tweets like the Thursday before the game, basically clarifying what his injury was. And I don't know that he was around all the time. And then he didn't go to Cincinnati, though. That didn't bother me, but it bothered a lot of fans. But like here, we'll go back to where we were. A year ago, he gets hurt late. They're on a playoff push. He never comes back when some thought he could come back. And they missed the playoffs. This year, he had an injury, which they originally said was a 1 to 3 week injury. He never came back. They made the playoffs, but lost to Cincinnati in a game where, quite frankly, if they had Lamar Jackson, the way that game went, they would have had a hell of a chance to win that football game. They almost won with Tyler Huntley.
Lamar Jackson and his style of play. There's a lot of talk about the way he runs the ball great, but he doesn't throw very well. Again, is that more accurate? How has that been played out?
Well, I think so. Look back at September of this past year, and he was playing as well as he's ever played. And that's passing, running, et cetera. Like, people talk about the risk of injury for him. His injuries have occurred in the pocket, not running the football. Now, granted, yes, he takes more hits because of his style of play, and you wonder how long he can play at this elite level. I'll be honest. He had that long touchdown run against Miami earlier this year, and the first thing I thought watching him is he doesn't look as fast as he did 2 years ago. He's still fast and probably faster than everybody else, but I just think 2019 Lamar Jackson would have ran away from everybody. So you do wonder how long he can play at this level. But remember, we live in a world where there's 32 teams and there aren't 32 franchise quarterbacks. And again, if they put the exclusive tag on him and start negotiating with other teams like Atlanta, Carolina, the Jets, maybe Vegas, they're going to be desperate to get themselves a franchise quarterback. I do think the Ravens will get what they want in trade compensation for Lamar Jackson.
I know it can get tiring as a coach, and you can see it on their face, but how frustrated is Harbaugh in talking about this all the time? Do you sense an exhaustion, not from the questions, but just the situation and the overall inability to sort of solidify this issue?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Now, at the end of season press conference, he was talking about how he loves Lamar, Lamar loves him, et cetera, et cetera. The Friday before the last game, Harbaugh wouldn't say his name. He did, like, in talking about Lamar Jackson, he refused to say his name, and you could tell this whole thing had kind of worn him down. And you know, quite frankly, they're a team that they think with the hell of Lamar Jackson, they're a Super Bowl contender, and their franchise quarterback was not there for them down the stretch. And I believe they think he could have been back.
How does Lamar Jackson, I mean, we're not in the room, but how do you think he is as a guy representing himself? Is he good at this? Does he need a pit bull to sort of speak for him?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I think that, I don't know that he's savvy in the ways of contract negotiations. Again, I think he's getting help from the NFLPA. But when you draw a line in the sand and say, this is what I want, and you aren't willing to negotiate off of that, it doesn't seem that difficult, at least from the outside looking in. Like, and that's why here we are. And remember the Ravens, and maybe you don't remember, but the Ravens 2 years ago, when they went into that offseason, they said, look, we know what we're shopping for. We know we're going to buy a Bentley. And then Josh Allen got his deal. And my understanding is after Josh Allen got his deal, and at the time, remember, this is Josh Allen post-2019. This isn't before he made the run in the playoffs. Lamar Jackson was widely considered the better quarterback. The Ravens, based on what I know, offered him less than what Josh Allen got, and he turned it down. And now the Deshaun Watson thing happens after. So the money just goes up. They could have gotten this done 2 years ago, and they chose not to.
If in the end it's if it's a trade and he goes somewhere else, is this one of those situations where there is blame, or is it just two sides not coming together? Like, how would it be set up as a story if indeed he is traded?
Well, so I think there's blame to go all around. I think the Ravens blew it, like I said, after the 2020 season, when they could have had him signed to a lesser deal and they chose to lowball him. I feel like they also failed Lamar Jackson in putting talent around him. This is a team that likes to play we have to stay under the cap. They don't want to use the cap like a credit card, like teams like the Rams and the Buccaneers have proven you can win a Super Bowl doing it that way. The Ravens don't like to do that. And they couldn't put talent around Lamar Jackson. Like we saw in the league, the Eagles went out and got A.J. Brown. The Bills went out and got Stephon Diggs. Tua got Tyreek Hill, and while he was on the field, those quarterbacks got better with proven number one wide receivers. The Ravens continued to draft guys, and those guys either weren't good or got hurt. And this passing offense wasn't good, and they decided not to go get him proven talent. They'd go out and get him the corpse of Deshaun Jackson or Dez Bryant, and that's just not going to get it done. Lamar, on his part, like, there are whispers that he could have played late in these last two seasons, and I think he's also stubborn, and that might suit him, and he does well on that. But I think when this thing ends, and I think it's ending in a divorce, I think there's blame to go around.
Ken Wyman, again, host of Inside Access on the Fan 105.7 in Baltimore on the Ravens. Good stuff, Ken. Thank you so much for joining us, man. Good talking to you.
No worries. Anytime.
You got it, man. That's interesting. Hey, we had Alex Stroph yesterday from ESPN Madison saying in the end, he thinks that the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are just going to come together and he's going to play next year. You got this. In this is where Ken makes a point. He thinks that there's going to be a divorce between Lamar Jackson and Baltimore. And I'm wondering about the ripple effects of that situation. Can you imagine a team saying, all right, that's it. No, we're not. You know what? You have a line in the sand you're not crossing, and we have a line in the sand that we're not crossing. We are not going to be what the Cleveland Browns did. We are not going to do that. And if we get a divorce because of this, we get a divorce because of this. If we trade you because of this, we trade you because of this. And it will allow other teams to make that same line in the sand. But it becomes interesting because it sounds like, again, you kind of get sick of losing two Decembers and being injured. It's okay to then go, well, maybe, just maybe, our future is somewhere else. Some teams don't know what their future is.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good stuff from Ken Wyman. If you have missed any of the interviews or any of the segments of the show, remember, you can subscribe to the podcast, podcastarena.com. Just search Wake Up Call. You should be able to get it and listen anytime. But we love having you listening now. Ken Wyman thinks it's going to end in a divorce. That's the feeling in Baltimore, at least. What would that say? I mean, seriously, what would that say? Like, that's one of the reasons I asked him the question, like, so what would it be, right? Like, if you have a team that is saying, here's our star quarterback, here's a guy that we can win a Super Bowl with, but we're not going to pay him that insane amount guaranteed, so we will send him somewhere else. And then on the flip side, you have a quarterback that is drawing the line in the sand saying, nope, he got it, and now I get it. And then he's willing to say, okay, I'm not budging, and then he ends up traded to another team. Like, in the end, are both at fault? Nobody at fault? Like, I think in the end it'll just be, nope, just we could not make this work. Yeah, and, you know, it's like it's similar like when you see business, you'll see somebody like, we've paired up with Company B. You're like, oh, that's pretty good. They're two giants. But then you find out like later it just collective differences, you know, all this. They just fade out. This is two sides. Listen, Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, I wouldn't go anywhere near becoming – if that is going to happen – If there is going to be a new standard for quarterback contracts in the NFL where it is all guaranteed now, 230, 235, 255, 270, whatever the number escalates to, where it's all guaranteed, if I'm Steve Bisciotti, I say I'm not going to be the owner that's responsible for that. If Arthur Blank wants to do it, if anybody else wants it, Jerry Jones wants to do it, Dave Tepper wants to do it, Stan Kroenke wants to do it, let them do it. Jim Irsay wants to do it, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to be the one that leads us down this road. If that's the new standard, fine. Me and my guys will work within that standard, but I'm not going to be the one that's setting it. Because you can get away with being the outlier, but you can't get away with being the standard bearer. And that's the responsibility coming for the next team that does this. One is crazy. Two, now you've made it normal. And that's where I wouldn't want the pressure of that. And that's why the Ravens, whatever side you fit on this, the Ravens are either the villain or the hero of how you evaluate this story. If you're one that thinks a team locking in a quarterback for 5 years, $250 million down the road, all of it guaranteed, meaning all of it is accounted for, meaning we can't get out of this. And if he fails 2 years in, you're on the hook for the rest of the money and having it count on the cap in dead money and all of that. If you're on, then they're the hero. If you're on the side of every player in the National Football League should get as much money as they can and guaranteed as they can, and if you are a quarterback where you can get generational wealth, you get it, then they're the villain. It depends on how you view this situation. Lamar Jackson has every single right to say he deserves Deshaun Watson's deal. He has every right to say that. Just like Joe Burrow has every right to say that. But the reality of it is if teams are going to draw that line in the sand, this is going to be really interesting to where this is going to be heading. Now, you can't undersell this story. I mean, you really can't. It's a really big story. This is not just a team figuring out what it's going to do with this quarterback. The ripple effects of this are going to be insane if it goes Lamar Jackson's way or if it goes Baltimore's way. And the idea, again, he pointed it out as well as it's a common cliche in this league that there aren't 32 starting quarterbacks in this league. You're willing to give up one of them for a couple of reasons, right? The couple of reasons are, hey, they're kind of getting tired of getting hurt and staying hurt all the way through, losing two Decembers in back-to-back years, including a feeling, right or wrong, that he could have come back at some point this year to have helped the team down the stretch, right? Didn't do that. That can wear on a team and an organization. Even though a number of players were supportive of Lamar Jackson in that idea. But here's the other thing. Not having a starting quarterback, in some cases, not all, because money can rule as well as anything, you ruin chances of landing really quality free agents. If you're a team with a, I don't know who our quarterback's going to be, or we're going with this guy until we find our quarterback, that might not be an attractive place for people to go. Now, again, money rules everything. You can get guys signed anywhere if the money's right. But all things being equal, we talked about this with Jacksonville, right? You know, that's one of the reasons that they had to cut ties with Urban Meyer, because if Urban Meyer continued to have this toxic environment and players are talking, yeah, you might be able to sway a few people to sign with you because you may offer them more money than any other team. But all things being equal, if it's just a few million dollars here or there, find me the player that's willing to walk into a toxic environment rather than taking another offer of a more stable environment with a better chance to win. Right? In the case of the Ravens, if you're after a certain free agent, and again, all things being equal, the money you're offering is about the same as somebody else, and you don't have a star quarterback and they do, find me a linebacker that's willing to go, or an offensive guard or whoever willing to go to Baltimore rather than the team that is offering them about the same amount of money, but you have a better chance to win because we have one of the star quarterbacks. The Ravens were an attractive team based on Lamar Jackson being on it. And their willingness to part ways with him based on not being the standard bearer for guaranteed money contracts says a lot about where this story is going. I've tried to sell this 2 days now on this being the most significant offseason story we have. It trumps Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers in the end is just an aging quarterback, Hall of Fame quarterback, just being on another team. It is no bearing out for as a Steeler fan, it is no bearing for the Steelers other than, hey, they may play the Jets. But it doesn't affect the way the Steelers are going to do business. It doesn't affect the way the Chargers are going to do business, or the Chiefs, or the Seahawks, or the Saints, or anybody else. In the end, we're curious about where Aaron Rodgers is going to end up, because he's a Hall of Fame quarterback, he's one of the best to play the game, and he could be in a different uniform. But Lamar Jackson being in a different uniform is an entirely different thing. It is not about, wow, this could make the Atlanta Falcons better. It is about two sides seeing where the standard is looking and trying to get that. And one trying to hold it back and the other trying to make it normal. And I think that's where this story is. This story affects down the road Bryce Young's future contract, right? CJ Stroud's future contract, Will Levis's future contract, Kenny Pickett's future contract. If you're a young quarterback in this league and you are heading to a stardom, and I don't know if any of those guys are, but if you are, what is happening right now with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson could affect how much of that, how much you feel when it comes to financially on your end. $270 million, $290 million, $300 million. Who's going to get the $300 million guaranteed deal? Well, right now, no one. But if there is a team willing to do, well, Lamar Jackson got 230 guaranteed, we can give you 241 guaranteed, then it starts. The clock is ticking. And you're talking about quarterbacks basically getting, and here's the thing, getting what every football player has wanted forever and ever. The same deals, the same contracts as NBA and Major League Baseball players. But see, Major League Baseball players and NBA players are automatically guaranteed no matter who they are and where they are and where they play and how much they play. Right now, we are just talking about star quarterbacks in the NFL. How long before it trickles down, before the wide receiver wants guaranteed money, before the left guard wants guaranteed money, before the defensive end that leads the league in sacks wants all of it guaranteed? How soon is this going to turn into every player that has a legitimate impact on the game, well, by the position they play, is now going to want the contract, whatever his position pays at its maximum at that particular time, but instead says, now I want all of it guaranteed? It won't take long. It really won't take long. So watch this story closely. And I'm now even more curious, because Ken Wyman, who I respect a lot as a talk show host and a guy that really knows his teams, that this is going to be Lamar Jackson is on another team. Somewhere, some way next year, he is on another team. And the Ravens will not be the organization that says, you know what? We're going to do just what the Browns do. So if you're looking to somebody to blame, you can blame us in Cleveland. Because really, they'll blame you. Cleveland, crazy. You changed the game. All right, thanks to Ken Wyman for joining us. Thanks to all of you for listening. Don't forget, podcast the show. You can listen to it anytime, anywhere at podcastarena.com. Ron and I will be back tomorrow for Throwback Thursday, but the Lombardi Line is coming up next. Keep it right here on Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us as we roll along here on a Wednesday.